Welcome.
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio, brought to you by OU Israel. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky. This week's show is for Parshat Vayakel Pekudei and Shabbat Parshat HaChodesh. This Shabbat is the fourth of the Arba Parshiot, the four special portions. It is also Shabbat Mevorachim Chodesh Nisan, the Shabbat on which we announce the upcoming month of Nisan, which will be next Tuesday. And as far as the cycle of months concerned, the Torah considers it to begin in Nisan. So in a different sense from the way we usually wish each other back on Rosh Hashanah time, a Shana Tova, this too is Happy New Year of some sort. We'll talk more about that later. In the meantime, let us proceed with Tehillim Kuf Lamed, Psalm 130. Shir ha-ma'alot mima'amakim k'raticha Adonai. Adonai shima v'koli, tehiyana aznecha kashuvot l'kol tachanunai. Im avonot tishmorya Adonai mi ya'amod, ki imacha haslicha l'ma'an tivarei. Ki viti Adonai kiveta nafshi v'lidvaro ho'cholti. Nafshi l'Adonai, mishomerim l'aboker, Shomerim laboker. Yachel Yisrael el Adonai, ki im Adonai hachesed v'harbe imo fedut. V'hu yifde et Yisrael mikol avonotav. Achenu kol beit Yisrael hanetunim batzara uvashivya, ha'omedim bein bayam uvein bayabasha, hamakom yirachem aleihem v'yotzieim mitzara lirvacha, u'me'afela la'ora u'mishibud la'geula, Hashta ba'agala uvizman kariv v'nomar amen. First recording and broadcast of this show is Yom Chamishi b'Shabbat Parshat Vayakel Pekudei HaChodesh, Thursday, March 15th. Beware the Ides of March. I found out from checking in the encyclopedia that, in the computer, that Ides of March are the 15th, of March, of course, but then the 15th of July and October, one other month, I don't even remember, are known as the Ides. In the other months, it's the 13th of the month. So if it's the middle of the month, I don't know how that works out, but that's what they say. On the Jewish calendar, it is the 25th day of Adar, 5767. And I'll let you in on a little private secret here. I am extremely late in doing this recording. I hope it'll get up on time, but there won't be any time for editing, so you're hearing this as if it is live with only a sort of slight delay. Parshat Vayakel Pekudei, let's put it in perspective. Since the beginning of the Book of Shemot, which we close with this Shabbat's reading, since the beginning of the Book of Shemot, we have gone from an enslaved family that grew into an enslaved nation. We saw at the very beginning of the book the birth of the Redeemer Moshe and the plagues on Egypt and the glorious events of Yetziat Mitzrayim, the Exodus, the splitting of the sea, the song of the sea, arriving at Sinai, experiencing Sinai, Ma'amad Har Sinai in Hebrew, Matan Torah, the giving of the Torah, the setting down of the laws, or many of the laws which will govern Jewish life and existence from that point forward, and then the command to build a sanctuary to God so that he will dwell among the Jewish people. And in Parshat Teruma, full detail of how this Mishkan tabernacle is supposed to look, the materials that it was made from, its dimensions, its furnishings, very, very much detail. Continues in Parshat Tetzaveh, with the command of tending the menorah, the making of the garments for the Kohen, especially for the Kohen Gadol, the golden altar, the incense altar, same thing, which was inside the sanctuary. And that brought us to the beginning of last week's reading of Ki Tisa. In the beginning, we had the washing basin and its stand. We had the command about the spices that would be used for incense and to mix with olive oil for the anointing oils. And we had the introduction to Bezalel of the tribe of Judah and Aholiyav of the tribe of Dan, who would be the chief artisans in constructing the Mishkan. And then we find a reiteration of Shabbat, especially in context with the building of the Mishkan. We need to be reminded of the supremacy of Shabbat, the fact that even the holy endeavor of building the Beit HaMikdash does not bypass the Shabbat. The Shabbat must be observed. It is the eternal sign between God and the people of Israel. Then the Torah returns to where it was up to vis-a-vis Moshe Rabbeinu, and that is at the top of Har Sinai at the end of 40 days and 40 nights, where he receives the Torah from God orally, and receives a down payment, so to speak, in the form of the Ten Commandments engraved by God's own hand on the Luchot, the two tablets of stone. Then God says, go down and take a look at what the people are doing. What are they doing? I won't go into it again. We spoke about it last week. Egel HaZahav, the golden calf. The mood of Shemot, that has been on an upswing and a maintenance of a high, high level all the way since enslavement at the beginning, has now come crashing down. There have been other times where we've complained to God and he's been upset, but nothing like the golden calf episode. That is a devastating blow to our feeling of relationship with God, or the lack thereof. And we were on the verge of extinction before we almost got started as a nation with the episode of Egel HaZahav. Without going into the details of last week's reading, we come to Vayakhel, and we're ready to pick up from where we left off before the Egel HaZahav, before the golden calf. The commands are repeated of the building of the Mishkan with full detail, preceded by a reminder of the supremacy of Shabbat. It's a very neat, now back to where we were, but we cannot avoid the fact that in the meantime, there has been this very, very serious violation on the part of the people of the golden calf, whatever that was actually and whatever it means. Some want to paint it like idolatry, and others say it was less than that, but it still certainly was an affront to God, for which we were almost wiped off the face of the earth by him, except for Moshe's arguments and intercession. But again, that's last week. What you have here is the full detail of the Mishkan and everything in it, again. And commentaries explore this issue, and I would like to share with you, as I have in past years, my own personal feeling. It's not my own invention, but it sort of is very much internalized by me, and I really, really believe it. Parshat Teruma Tetzaveh, beginning of Ki Tisa, which we read about already, was not yet revealed to the people of Israel. They were waiting for Moshe's return down from the mountain. And when he finally came down and smashed the Luchot and destroyed the calf and castigated the people and went back up Har Sinai and then another 40 days and 40 nights later came down, it was already Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, the first Day of Atonement, really, the day that gave the nature and feature of atonement to it, to the 10th of Tishrei, because he came down with God's message of forgiveness. He came down with the second set of luchot to replace the ones that he had smashed or had broken in his charge, and with the command of V'asuli Mikdash V'shachanti B'tocham, make a sanctuary for me. Now, I'd like to call your attention to a phenomenon that's not unique to the Torah, but it is belonging to anything that a person reads of an account of episodes that occurred, that sometimes you read yourself into the episode itself, which in the context of Torah is usually quite important, and sometimes you take a step back and realize that you are reading an account rather than reliving the account. And what I mean in this context is that the Torah teaches us in full detail about the building of the sanctuary before, chronologically, the people were commanded to build the sanctuary, before the sinning of the golden calf. The command itself came, according to most opinions, after the sin of the golden calf. The command was given to Moshe to transmit to the people before the golden calf happened, but he never got a chance to do that before. But the Torah, rather than just telling us the way it happened, gives us the command and its full detail. I underline that. I think it's very important. Before the Torah tells us about the sinning of the golden calf, it allows us to put a certain perspective, to keep a certain perspective on the building of a sanctuary whose actual command and building was, let's say, tainted by the episode of the golden calf, and because Truma and Tetzaveh come before Kitisa, we are able to sort of block out the golden calf is something that has not yet happened. That's, of course, a result of reading it year after year. We know that it happened, but we can block it out by saying it didn't happen yet, and here we see a command to build the Mikdash even before we learn about the sin of the golden calf. I believe that it allows us to think in terms of a sanctuary not only as an atonement and a repair to the golden calf, but as something of a purer, untainted command that was always meant to be and was sort of spoiled a little by the episode of the golden calf, but by being taught to us before, we're able to see it the way it should have been. I don't know if I'm getting this across, and even though I've said it many times, it's still difficult to put into words. Let me give you the mushal, the analogy, the parable that I think of when I think of this sequence of the material in the Torah in the second half of the book of Shemot. Picture a child, 10 years old, 11 years old. His parents decide that for his birthday, which is coming up soon, they're going to buy him a computer. And they not only buy him one of the most up-to-date computers, but they get good advice on much, much software, all kind of educational things, as well as games, and this kid is really going to enjoy this gift. It will be a pure demonstration of the love and affection the parents have and the way they choose to celebrate his birthday for him. They buy it a couple of weeks before his birthday, and they hide it in a closet. And he does not know about it. About a week before his birthday, The parents get a call from the principal of the boy's school. I say boy, could be a girl too. But do the analogy with it what you'd like. They get a call from his principal inviting them down to an important meeting, face to face. The principal tells him at this meeting that the kid has been a problem in school. He's had poor grades in a couple of subjects, and he's disruptive, and in consultation with the school psychologist, the principal has chosen to recommend to the parents that one thing that might be very helpful at home to help straighten out the kid would be a computer with certain educational software. It will help him remedially in the classes that he's not doing well in. It might help also give him an outlet for some of his pent-up energy, and we should see positive results. Now comes the kid's birthday, and the parents give him the computer. It is no longer with the untainted joy that they had originally planned for it, but be sure that they did plan for it. That's crucial. And now they say to him, we were called in by the principal, and this is what he recommends, and we agree, and there are certain things that you should do on this computer with this computer, and hopefully you'll get better grades in school, etc., etc. You could finish that analogy any way you want. More importantly is, mashal l'mahadover dome, what does this compare with? I believe that the mikdash, the concept of a physical structure, which would serve as a focal point of Jewish religious spiritual energy, was intended to be even without the sin of the golden calf. When the Jews sinned, they demonstrated their serious need for a physical focus. They had chosen an inappropriate physical focus, known as the golden calf, and the Mishkan gave them the acceptable kosher outlet for the physical focus that obviously human beings need in order to function properly. It's as if God realized, I say that just speaking of God in human terms, because I believe this was his plan in the beginning, but we could say it as if God realized that we were too human to be, let's say, higher level partners with him, like he had hoped, so to speak. And by re-evaluating the conditions of partnership, we were able to maintain that position of partnership with God and proceed from there. In other words, the fashioning of the two cherubs out of gold from the lid of the Aron is now seen as the kosher counterpart, we'll say, of the golden calf. Some of the commentaries put it like this. What's the difference between fashioning a golden calf and fashioning the kruvim? The answer is simple. It's a small difference, but it's a huge difference. The difference is God commanded one and he commanded against the other. And that's all you need. The same thing applies to things like wearing woolen linen. The Torah says at least twice you're not allowed to wear woolen linen garments. And yet we read in these weeks, Sedras, about the garments of the Kohen Gadol that were made of wool and linen together. Well, what's going on here? Are we allowed to wear linen and wool, shatnez, or not? Well, the answer is it depends on God's command. If God commands you not to wear wool and linen, you don't. If he commands you to make the garments of the Kohen Gadol out of wool and linen, obviously you do. You don't say, oh, excuse me, God, didn't you tell us we can't wear wool and linen? To which he would say, duh, of course I told you not to. This is the way that you're supposed to do it. And it goes on and on like that. You're not allowed to do this on Shabbat, but on the other hand, in the Beit HaMikdash, many of the malachot that were forbidden on Shabbat are not only permitted in the Beit HaMikdash, in the temple, but are required in the temple. That's the way it works. Because God is the boss. And that's the lesson of the Egel HaZahav and its aftermath, the command to build the Mikdash. But the fact, again, I go back to it, and I don't know if I'm really saying this the right way, of being taught it in its full detail before we had an inkling of this sin of the golden calf, means to say this was the plan. This was the computer you were supposed to have a good time with and grow with. And now, unfortunately, you're going to share the computer's higher goals with remedial math and remedial English, with atonement for your souls, with tikkun, spiritual repair of defects, because that's what happened in between. But we should not lose sight of the fact that the Asuli Mikdash, the Shachanti Betocham, is a lofty goal that was not supposed to be dependent upon or tainted by the Egel HaZahav. I hope that got across, because that's all really I'm going to talk about the Sedras of Ayakel and Pekudei. I will add one more thing. We find a phrase repeated 18 times or so of Vayasu Kein B'nai Yisrael, the people of Israel, did as they were commanded, or as God commanded Moshe, over and over again at each step in fashioning the Mishkan and its furnishings. Why? Because they had not done what they were commanded to do in the episode of the Egel HaZahav. This is how you straighten yourself out. You start listening. You start paying attention. You start following the rules. So an emphasis on the detail, an emphasis on, and they did as they were commanded, because we could say, like, it's about time. The Sedra mentions Rosh Chodesh Nisan, which is an unusual tie-in to the calendar, which we'll talk about in a moment.
Yeah,
That was a song we've played more than once over the years. I like it very much, and it speaks. It comes from the Zmirot of Motzoi Shabbat, but it's a prayer for a good month. Now, month and Shabbat interplay very much. For example, case in point, we have Shabbat Parshat HaChodesh. We have the Shabbat of the portion of the month. The month that we're talking about is Nisan, which is coming up next Tuesday. The Parshat HaChodesh is the origin of the command to form a Jewish calendar with the words HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem, Rosh Chodeshim. This month is the top of your months, Rishon Hu Lachem L'Chodshei Hashana. It is the first month of the months of the year. I've explained this before. Let me say it again. God created the world and everything in it. And he chose to take a piece of time and sanctify it. That is Shabbat. God tells us, I created the world in 6 days and rested on the seventh. Therefore, God has blessed the seventh day and made it holy. Those who follow the Torah's command to keep the Shabbat are honoring God for his act of sanctification of the Shabbat by saying, we accept that the Shabbat is holy. We accept that that goes along with the prohibition of various types of creative activity. That goes along with the requirement to sanctify the day as it enters and as it leaves in Kiddush, in Havdalah, and a myriad of other details of proper Shabbos observance. But it is essentially God who sanctified the seventh day and made it holy. Then, he tells us, right before the Exodus, when we were a soon-to-be-born nation, he tells us that he wants us to do this awesome creative act of sanctifying time. not reacting just to God's sanctification of the Shabbat, but to do it ourselves at His command, that's crucial, obviously, and sanctify each month, the first day of the month. How do we know? The Medrash tells us God showed Moshe the form of the birth of the new moon and said, when you see the moon this young, sanctify the day. Kazera'e v'kadesh. The details we won't go into now, but the fact of the matter is that the sanctification of Rosh Chodesh, which in turn is responsible for the sanctity of every day of Yom Tov, every festival, the sanctity of Pesach depends upon the sanctification of Rosh Chodesh Nisan, which depends upon an act of a human court, not an act of God. To be sure, there are other reasons why Shabbat is the day we announce the coming Rosh Chodesh. But I believe one of the reasons is the fact that God says, on my holy day, which I command you to observe, that's when I want you to announce the coming of Rosh Chodesh. This is only the way I'm putting it now. I want you to announce the coming Rosh Chodesh Dafka, specifically on Shabbat, to say God's holy day, God's other holy day, God's holy day that He made sacred and commanded us to follow, the day that we made sacred and He follows, in a matter of speaking, so to speak. Rambam Maimonides says in his Laws of the Sanctification of the Month that if it turns out that a Sanhedrin that sanctifies a Rosh Chodesh made an error, they accepted witnesses that hadn't seen the proper thing, and they're off a day, God readjusts. Rather than telling us, you made a mistake, switch it, it's God that says, I will adjust to Bnei Yisrael, because this is their act of sanctification. Now, obviously, it's God who created the heavens and the earth, the sun, the moon, the planet Earth, and the other planets, and the cycles with which they go around in orbit. So it's really His creation as well. But the investment of sanctity into the concept of a month, this He gave over to us. He said, you do it, and it will be done. I'm not going to do it for you. I'll go along with it, but you will be the one to sanctify. Now, I'd like to add at this point that when we have a Sanhedrin, which is the authoritative body that is able to actually carry out Kiddush HaChodesh, the sanctification of Rosh Chodesh, then they do it on a month-to-month basis. Without a Sanhedrin, since its demise until the reestablishment of a Sanhedrin sometime in the future, we have a different system. We have a system of mathematical calculation based on the average time it takes the moon to go through its phases and a whole bunch of other rules. And we have an act of sanctification by a long-ago Beit Din, a long-ago Sanhedrin, who basically said, by this method of calculation, all future Rosh Chodeshes that are determined by this calculation shall hereby, by our power of Sanhedrin, be holy, because we would be stuck. We would say, Tuesday is Rosh Chodesh Nisan. We would say, Yalav Yavo and Halel and Rosh Chodesh. We would call it the first of Nisan, but it would not have its sanctity, because we don't have a Sanhedrin to proclaim it sacred. And had it not been for a long ago Sanhedrin that did proclaim, based on this calculation, the future Rosh Chodeshes, Roshei Chodeshim, then we wouldn't have the ability to have a sacred day of Rosh Chodesh, and therefore Pesach, for example, 2 weeks afterwards, would not be holy. We wouldn't have to get rid of chametz. We wouldn't have a mitzvah to eat matzah or anything. It wouldn't exist. It exists. The holidays exist. They are ours, and they exist by the power of Sanhedrin, which is the official representative body of the Jewish people. Let's take this one step further. God could have done otherwise. He could have said, I worked for 6 days and rested on the seventh. I sanctify the seventh. You keep it holy. I also send the moon around the earth through its phases. When the cycle of phases begin from no moon to little crescent and building up, that's when you shall start Rosh Chodesh. And I hereby sanctify the months based on your observation of the moon, or based on your calculation of the cycle of the moon. Then it would be up to us to produce the calendar that follows the rules, just like we produce Yom Rishon, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Shabbos. We didn't create the sacredness of Shabbos, but we are duty-bound to count the days of the week until Shabbat and rest from activity on Shabbat. So, too, we could have had a similar thing with the cycle of the year, with the cycle of the holidays and with Rosh Chodesh. But God wanted more of us than that. He says, you are my partners. I put up the original capital. I created the moon and the sun, and I sent them around. I want you not only to watch those cycles, but I want you to use your built-in authority as a Sanhedrin, as a representative of the Jewish people, to create the sacredness, the holiness of Rosh Chodesh. This is something that we celebrate every month, but especially we take stock on this Shabbat, Parshat HaChodesh, when the bulk of the reading in the Torah deals with Korban Pesach and with Matzah and Chametz, but it's those opening two verses that get me hot, so to speak, of God speaking to Moshe and Aaron in the land of Egypt, saying, HaChodesh HaZelachim Rosh Chodeshim, this month is the first of your months. What does it mean for us? It means we have a Jewish calendar. It means more than that. It means we should use the Jewish calendar. And I don't mean only on Jewish ceremonial occasions. I'm talking about internalizing this gift from God and this manifestation of our power of giving sanctity to the profane, which in essence, that's what we do. We are the ones that make Rosh Chodesh, Rosh Chodesh. March 1st, April 1st, January 1st, February 29th. They don't have any intrinsic sacredness, sanctity. A Shabbat has an intrinsic sacredness, sanctity, because God put it there. The first of Nisan is sacred because we, the Jewish people, declared it sacred. This is an awesome thing if you think about it. And we could demonstrate this, as I've mentioned in the past, often. And I know that some of the listeners are going to say, there he goes again. You know that it's my favorite topic, or one of my favorite topics. The truth is, I only say it's one of my favorite topics because it's a little embarrassing to say it's my all-time favorite. But I definitely have spent a lot of time and emotion and effort and brain power into trying to understand better and better how the calendar works. Again, translate that. 30 days hath September, April, June, and November. Nice. Lots of people know that ditty. So if somebody says, how many days in August? 31. How many days in Tammuz? 31? No. No Jewish month has more than 30 days, nor less than 29. So your choices are 29 or 30. The answer happens to be 29 in our fixed calendar. In a calendar of an active Sanhedrin, it could have 29, it could have 30. The point is, we, the Jewish people, should know our calendar better and use it. How many Jews listening to my voice now know their secular calendar birth date, but don't know their Hebrew birthday? A lot of people do. A lot of people don't. Every time I speak of this at the Israel Center, I give the same offer. Just come to me and I'll tell you your birthday. And I pull out my Palm Pilot, or I go to the computer with Kal Luach and many other programs. It's a simple matter. A person really has to know if he was born in the daytime or after sunset, because that will change the Hebrew birth date by a day. But a person should know that. And after knowing it, should also celebrate it. And I don't mean to throw away your birthday you've been celebrating all your life. Do what we do. It's a nice suggestion. We celebrate each member of the family's birthday in a range of days from the Jewish date to the secular date, or the secular date to the Jewish date, whichever comes first and second. My daughter, Ora, who had her Hebrew birthday on the 9th of Adar, her English birthday is coming up the 19th of March, next Monday. And it has been a hefty 4 weeks of her birthday celebration. So what does that mean? She has to get a present every day. But we have a happy birthday sign that hangs in the living room between your birthdays. We have a message of happy birthday, which I write in lipstick and toothpaste on the bathroom mirror. These sound like little Darishkeit, silly things, but you'd be surprised, because it is a way that we can internalize the concept of HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem Rosh Chodashim. I've mentioned in the past, and please forgive me when I keep saying that, that every single check that I have written in Israel for the last 25 years has been dated according to the Jewish calendar. Could not do that in the United States, could not do that any place else in the world, but you can do it in Israel. The Jewish calendar is recognized in this country's officialdom. The point after you can write a Jewish date is to do it. It is a tiny gesture, but I believe that every time I write on a check, like I did earlier today, Kaf Hei Adar, the 25th of Adar, you can write in Hebrew or in English, 25th of Adar, 5767, that I was fulfilling the spirit of this very first command to the people of Israel to make a calendar. It's a very special thing. And it's a special thing that manifests itself in a very mundane way. If we have a Sanhedrin today, and they go through the entire process of eyewitness testimony to the birth of the new moon, to the first visibility of the lunar crescent, as it is called, and to the sanctification of the day as Rosh Chodesh, that's the grand way that the mitzvah is done. But the most I could do in that circumstance is to be in the courtyard of the Sanhedrin early in the morning when the Nasi comes out to proclaim the day holy and respond to that proclamation, which I look forward to. But in my everyday, day-to-day life, and yours too if you live in Israel, you can date your check in Hebrew instead of in English, meaning the Jewish calendar rather than the secular calendar, and that is a fulfillment of the spirit of HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem. Know your Hebrew birthday. Use Hebrew dates. Know Hebrew dates. And one of the other things, which is a hang-up of mine, is based on sources that I've seen, is not using numbers for the secular months. January should not be 1. You should write J-A-N if you want to write January, because 1 belongs to Nisan. How do I know? Listen to the Maftir this Shabbat when we will read Chodesh Hazeh Lachem Rosh Chodeshim Rishon Hu. It is the first L'Chodshei Hashana for you, for us. On that note, I wish you a Shabbat Shalom and a Chodesh Tov L'Hishtameah.